Get ready.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 162 of the Weekly Cooldown and it is August 12th. As you know or may not know, my previous co-host, Paul, is no longer with us. Not that he passed away. He's just not doing the show anymore. As you may or may not know, he worked for Blizzard. So we decided it may be a better idea for him not to be on the show for a while, or at least in a co-host capacity. Don't want to tie his name to anything. So it's just me, maybe a co-host down the line, maybe Paul again as a co-host if he changes careers or something like that, but we'll see. We've got headlines, I've got a guest, it's the whole shebang, and also some news about 5th anniversary. Oh yeah, that's happening. So, without further ado, let's get started. A new Genshin Impact-like video game, Tower of Fantasy, has released and is causing an uproar in a few different ways. The game, which was released on August 10th in North America, boasts a few Genshin Impact like things that Genshin Impact doesn't have, actually. Like customizable characters, or a very, very connected open world, but according to players, is currently a little unstable or unable to play. The servers for the game were unable to keep up with the amount of players trying to access the game, and while the developers were quick to address, fix, and offer compensation for players affected by being unable to access the game, players who did not have, or who did have access, found numerous bugs, glitches, and other issues, mostly cosmetic. One glitch pushed a character's hair off of their head. Another basically caused the 3D characters to become 2D characters based on how you manipulate the camera. At the time of this recording, there are still players having trouble accessing the game, but opinions are mixed on whether or not it is worth trying to play or if it's as fun as similar games.
I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to observe that that reminds me so much of that Nintendo 64 era of 3D where like trees were 2D. And so you would try to circle around them and they would just face you at all angles.
Yeah, they would just look at you.
The trees pretty fun to see that in a modern game. Spooky.
An Overwatch pro player, Myung Bong, was let go from the team recently. Myung Bong played for the New York Excelsior team beginning in January 2022. However, despite the New York Excelsior Twitter page tweeting out Myung Bong's departure, it seems someone forgot to tell Myung Bong himself. Moments after the tweet was released, Myung Bong replied and, quote, retweeted a series of question marks. The New York Excelsior Twitter page also tweeted about their newest player, also Myung Bong's replacement, An Soon Jae, just a few hours before. The team posted again on Twitter that they did not properly communicate the separation, or in this case, the firing of Myung Bong to the player, and apologized and reassured fans that and their players that they have immediately changed the way that they will communicate these decisions moving forward. Dragon Ball may be coming to Fortnite somehow. In a new tweet from the official Fortnite Twitter, a picture of the dragon Shenron from Dragon Ball and the words "Speak, name your wish" seem to tease the coming of Dragon Ball or some form of crossover. The tweet also included a date of August 16th, 2022. Though nothing is yet known by the public, players and fans are of course speculating that Goku and Vegeta will most likely be the major characters to release, just as Naruto and Sasuke were previously. Some are also hoping for in-game events, perhaps special maps, that connect the world to the Dragon Ball series. We may see leaks in the coming days, but we will otherwise be waiting just 5 more days to see what Fortnite has in store. And finally, we got a brand new look at Splatoon 3 in a Nintendo Direct. We got a look at the Splatsville Hub, the types of matches that will be available in the game, clothing shops, and something called Anarchy Battles as a new form of ranked play. Additionally, there is now a practice mode that will allow you to practice in skirmish, as well as view replays of other matches. And there's more, including new bosses in the co-op Salmon Run, a recon mode that allows you to select stages to take a tour of, a mechanic allowing you to change and customize banners, badges, and titles, and also a winning emote. And also a card game called Table Turf Battle. Mm-hmm. This recap just scratches the surface of the 30-minute video. A Splatoon 3 demo called Splatoon 3 Splatfest World Premiere will take place on August 27th, allowing players to play Splatoon 3 and participate in a new three-team Splatfest, Rock, Paper, Scissors. The full Splatoon 3 game is released on September 9th, and we will have more to say about Splatoon 3 later in this episode. And those are just some of the headlines from this week. If you've got anything to chat about, or you wanna talk about something else that we didn't cover here, please drop it in. There was a car. Please drop it in the chat if you feel like it. If you're here watching right now, anything like that, come on by. So just for the listener who's listening to this, when we usually drop the episode on Friday, we're testing out the audience mode today on our recording program. There are 6 people in the audience. Oh my goodness. Hello. Wow. No, wait. No, there's 4 people because there's 2 of us and 4 people in the audience. So there's 4 people in the audience. We're testing this out because, in October, we're due for a 5-year anniversary. 5 years of the weekly cooldown, and I want to do a big old live show, massive live show with like a cool lady and or dude or someone else entirely, maybe a space alien if I can find one. And yeah, I just wanted to test it out. So I see people in the chat saying hello. 2 of my coolest friends. One is a friend of the show even. Oh my goodness. Look at that. That's crazy stuff. So anyway, hi to y'all in the chat. Hello to those in the future. Sorry you weren't here to see this cool down. There we go. I did it.
Cool down.
Chris is here.
I am.
Chris, where are you from?
I am from the Franchise Festival podcast. We cover... Gosh, this is actually my second time on the weekly cooldown. It's been a minute. And you have been on the Franchise Festival podcast in the interim, talking about the ever lovely and baffling Resident Evil Code Veronica.
Yes. I'm an expert at this point, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. As that suggests, we have been covering Resident Evil for our second season. Kind of the format of the show is that we work through every month. There's a new episode, a bonus episode for Patreon subscribers. Plug.
Whoa.
But every episode there is or every month there's an episode on the first of the month for everybody. And we cover per season an entire game series. So for season 1, we covered The Legend of Zelda. Those first few episodes are pretty rough. They're in early 2020, but we, you know, we caught our sea legs, and the back half of that season's really great. And then for season 2, we've been covering Capcom's Resident Evil, and we're closing in here on the end at the end of 2022.
Now, where are we in season 2? What part of Resident Evil are we up to?
That's a great question. We are in the rough patch. A lot of people have a lot of different feelings on Resident Evil 5, so that could go one way or the other. I'm personally not a big fan. But we hit that a few months ago, and since then, for our public episodes each month, we cover kind of a core series entry. The bonus episodes are reserved for strange spin-offs and so forth. So for right now, our last public episode was on Resident Evil Revelations 2. Which I actually regard as a peak for the series. I would put that right up there in the top maybe 4 or 5 Resident Evil games.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear you say that because it doesn't get a lot of press, but I was really struck going back and revisiting it just how good it is.
I think I need to revisit it if only because I got a bad ending And I didn't know that there were bad endings.
Yeah.
And I got really upset and I was like, well, you know, the game was good, I guess, so whatever. And then I went and read, like, there are multiple endings. And I was like, why would you do this to me? But yeah. I just haven't gotten a chance to revisit it and get the better endings yet.
The bad ending to Resident Evil Revelations 2 is pretty funny, too. So at least you got kind of a funny, sad ending. The other one is also kind of a bad ending. Like, it's just two different
endings. Oh, it is. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I'm missing something, but I'm not missing
right,
something.
You do get an additional boss fight that's pretty sweet, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
You know.
All right. It's worth visiting. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'll at some point go back to Revelations 2, play with my favorite character, Claire.
Yes! Oh, high five, Kami Jace. More Claire, please. This.
Put Claire in more games.
Yeah.
This isn't a hard ask.
No, Capcom. It's not a lot to ask.
Jonathan Capcom, put Claire in more games.
JF Capcom. Come on, dude. Yeah, our next episode at the time of recording this is going to be Resident Evil 7. We're recording it this upcoming weekend with a special guest, actually. We've got Adam Bucherri, the creator of the tabletop game Enter the Survival Horror, which is kind of a thinly veiled Resident Evil tabletop game.
Sure.
And we're really excited to have him on the show. So we're going to be talking about Resident Evil 7.
Do you think I could get that guy on my show?
Oh, yeah, 100%. He's a genial fellow.
I need to know
you
more
love
about
tabletop stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're more of a tabletop guy than tabletop. I am.
I've been too into tabletop lately. So a Resident Evil tabletop game sounds like something I need in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll send you his contact details. I think he would be a wonderful guest for your show.
Excellent. Tune in September, maybe, or October. Maybe closer to Halloween. Halloween
I am episode. Fixing to get him to, DM a tabletop session with myself and my co-hosts for maybe a bonus episode of our show. But the stars just haven't aligned. One of my co-hosts is always on the road for his day job. And my other co-host is in grad school up, I don't know, 6 or 7 states away. So it's very hard to get us all in the same room. And there's a charm to tabletop in the same room, in my opinion.
That's fair. That's fair. I do 100% of my tabletop over the internet. Shout out to my DM who's in the chat.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I just need to get with the times. I need to get with the times. You know, we've gone through a pandemic. We're still in a pandemic. I really need to be a little more flexible with my tabletop habits.
Yeah, wherever you can get it, tabletop is good. That's my new motto that I made up as of a couple months ago, because I've been, again, way too into tabletop. Well, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm very excited to hear this episode of Fan Festival. Looking at the chat, let's see. Our friend Mellow Mystical says I should have my DM Jude and the lizards on as guests, but Jude has already been a guest and there were no lizards in the background because I edit podcasts pretty well. Jude says that tabletop pulls you in, and it does. It really, really does. In any form, I've heard really great stories of people doing it, in person and having like the time of their lives. And speaking from experience, I do 2 sessions over the internet and I have a blast each time. So I think it's good where you can get it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I get most of my online tabletop from your Twitter feed. I get to see the updates. They brighten my day when I see them. So, I wanted to draw attention.
Like that.
Mellow Mystical here apparently owns the exclusive rights to Claire. So maybe that's why we haven't seen her in a Resident Evil game lately.
He's lying. He's lying. Well, that was great. Now, very quick, brief question. Aside from Splatoon 3, because we will be talking about that later, do you have any thoughts on any of our headlines that I spoke about this week? Aside from the Genshin Impact one.
You know, I wish I did, but these headlines are almost specifically targeted to people who aren't me. You know, I've barely played Genshin Impact. Yep. I played it briefly as like a... I don't remember what the circumstances were. It ran kind of questionably on the PS4, and so I kind of jumped off it on there, but it runs really great on PS5, so I need to revisit it. I haven't really played Genshin Impact. I haven't played Overwatch, which is a real, what would you call it, a blind spot for me. I haven't played Fortnite. Kami Jace, I haven't played Fortnite. I am like, that, I'm see, that's so a far little out.
Surprising. I feel like everyone's played Fortnite, but I feel like everyone has played Overwatch, but I also understand if you've never played either. Because
I have so many friends who do, you know? Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend you go do it.
Yeah, like, I'm a single player guy. That's not something
I want for you.
Yeah.
But also I think like it's one of those games that the culture kind of hovers around, you know?
Yeah, I always get, I'm always excited to see the passion around these games, but as kind of a single player guy, I just don't spend a lot of time in online games. Funny enough, Splatoon is the online game that I've spent the most time in besides Final Fantasy XIV. Oh. And even with both of those, it's kind of like dipping a toe in the water. I'm not too connected to the wider community.
People would say, like, good for you.
You know, maybe, but gosh, there's so much joy to be had, isn't there? Like, it's nice to see all of the excitement around it, even if when it's, one keeps it at a distance.
When it's good, it's good. When it's good, it's good. And when it's, like, bad, it's real bad.
That's the truth. Yeah, there's a lot of unfortunate harassment and so forth that can happen. So, it is nice to avoid that. I used to play more online games before voice chat was a thing. Back in the early 2000s, because I am an old fogey, I recall Battlefield 1942 was the last online game that I played a lot of. And then they made voice chat a thing, and I worked in a call center for 3 years, and it was just, I was allergic to it.
It's not something you want to revisit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just how it goes. But I do like to see the passion for it, even if I'm not directly connected.
Briefly speaking of harassment and voice chats and all that, we did have a story we were going to talk about today, and I don't want to dive into it too much, but I do want to like scratch the surface of it a little bit. A trans Twitch streamer who goes by the name Keffels Online was swatted this week, or maybe last week, but it was definitely very recent. And the trials and tribulations, first of all, that one has to go through when swatted. But then on top of that, swatted while trans is too much.
If I recall correctly, they used her, like they dead named her throughout the entire process, which is pretty grim. Yeah.
It's awful. And I don't want to talk about it too much, but what I do want to say is cut it the fuck out, man. Like, I cannot stand it. We live in these tumultuous ass times already. We don't need the extra vitriol in the form of impersonating someone on the internet and almost getting them killed. Like, this person now fears for their life and is trying to move out of their city because they fear for their life.
Yeah, can you imagine? Like,
expeditiously move because they fear for their life. That's awful. From, like, playing video games and talking about things on Twitch.
Yeah, and thankfully her GoFundMe has been pretty successful, so it seems like she's getting the community support that she needs, but it's awful to see. Like you said, just grow up, you know? These things kill people. These are so harmful.
I'm going to leave it there, but I do want to say just, like, cut it out, please. On that note, we have some stories to get to in a minute, so we're going to take a quick break. Stick around if you're in the audience. Stick around if you're listening to this on Friday, because you won't want to miss this stuff. That's for sure. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, bye.
Greetings, PodQuesters. I am Colt Hawkins, famous bard of the podcast Intelligence Check. Intelligence Check is set in a Tolkien-esque world where our party members are forced by fate down the road of adventure. Literally, fate is physically forcing us. We keep trying to walk away, but the damn thing never lets up. Now I know what you're saying. Another D&D podcast? But trust me, I'm worth listening to. I mean, we're worth listening to. And doesn't this accent make you just want to trust me? Intelligence Check celebrates the camaraderie of lifelong friends, joking around a table while remaining true to their characters and story. We bring you short, bi-weekly adventures full of action, banter, too many tentacles, and a naked dwarf. Oh, dear God, someone please put some clothes on that dwarf. So roll an intelligence check. Because the show you're listening to now is awesome, but you'll need something to hold you over while you wait for new episodes.
Oh, come on, is that really the tagline we're using?
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, we've got news, starting with Microsoft. Microsoft and Sony are both in the news this week, and they're kind of battling it out. So, Microsoft is claiming that Sony is paying for blocking rights, which would stop developers from adding their games to the Xbox Game Pass. These claims are part of a document filed with Brazil's competition regulation, and also part of the review for Microsoft's Activision Blizzard acquisition. Both companies seem to be at odds, with Sony making claims that Microsoft would take Call of Duty exclusive with the merger, despite CEO Phil Spencer speaking to the contrary, and the fact that the next three Call of Duty games are contracted to release on PlayStation. So there's actually way more nuance to this story. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the United States FTC is also reviewing the same documents, but they do so kind of privately. There's the whole thing with Epic versus Apple, where Microsoft apparently was considering lowering the revenue split that they get, that the PC games get, in exchange for streaming rights to Microsoft only.
Like, oh, that's part of this too. I didn't even consider that angle.
There's a whole lot of things. Like, it doesn't seem like Microsoft has done that, but it seems like they were considering it at least, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of highlights this kind of like, the kind of corporate side of video games that we don't really think about all that often, yeah. Right?
Where it's not our business in some ways, right? Like
it's hard to grasp. It's a lot of legalese and lawyer jargon, but at the same time, it's like, you guys are messing with my video games.
Well, right. Yeah. We have to care about the final product. We don't have to care about how it gets there because, you know, that's what people are paid to do.
Sure. Yeah. It feels particularly like nefarious though, right? So almost like Sony is trying to get Microsoft to not get this acquisition for some reason rather than Sony being worried about exclusivity or something like that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drag, isn't it? I don't know. I can see people being concerned about that exclusivity because broadly speaking, exclusivity is good for companies and bad for fans. You know, having what you want to play accessible on more hardware is universally good for fans, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, I say this as a pretty dedicated Switch user, so, you know, hypocrisy abounds. But that said, exclusivity is kind of a drag. At the same time, I really love Game Pass, and so it's also a bummer to see people trying to keep things off of Game Pass from their competitors. Like, I can understand it from a business point of view. But as somebody not involved in the business, I don't have to like it.
Right. Sure. Yeah. And one of these articles points out that Sony hasn't really responded to the accusation that Microsoft is throwing out here. But it is kind of easy to imagine, to your point, that people would be more inclined to go get Xbox Game Pass for like $10, $5, mm-hmm. or in some cases $1 a month to go play any game that's on there, including possibly Call of Duty, rather than going to purchase and own that game for $60.
Yeah, I mean, I own an Xbox and a PlayStation, and I spend a lot more time playing on the Xbox primarily because of Game Pass. So I can see that being considered a threat that, from a business perspective, ought to be undermined.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other interesting part about this is that Phil Spencer has said in the past that he wants Game Pass to be on, like, everything. Mm-hmm. He wants it to have the Skyrim reach, right?
Right.
He wants it on your PlayStation. He wants it on your Switch. He wants it on your fridge. Like, anything that can run Xbox Game Pass, he wants it on there. So, with that in mind, would Sony benefit from that, or would they lose out from that?
I always wonder about this because there was a lot of talk about Game Pass ending up on the Switch a while ago.
Yeah.
Which would have been incredible. Although, you know, you wonder how it would have worked. Would it have only been the streaming side of it? Like, Game Pass on a PlayStation 5 could probably leverage the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm no tech guy. I have no idea how any of that works. So who's to say? But I really do wonder about the business side of it, because Game Pass has so far only ended up on either kind of hardware neutral platforms,
right,
smartphones, yeah, computers, that sort of thing. It hasn't ended up on any direct competition to Microsoft's game hardware. I'm not sure if it's available on iPhones. Do you happen to know that?
See, I was literally just going to look it up, okay, because I don't think...
That's the one gray area to this, right?
There does seem to be Games Pass on the Apple App Store.
Yeah, I know there's that backbone, like the controller that wraps around your phone, and it's advertised... That's iPhone exclusive, and it's advertised as good for Game Pass, so I guess I should have assumed it was on iPhone.
I wouldn't have, actually. Even with the controller support, I don't know that I would have thought that Microsoft... anything would have been available on Mac anything. So
so that's the one exception to this.
Yeah. The fact that, even Xbox Cloud Gaming is on iPhone, iPad, and Mac. So there is some kind of agreement there, right? Mm-hmm. So why couldn't there be an agreement with Sony, with PlayStation?
Yeah, I suspect at this point the biggest problem with PlayStation is the PlayStation Plus program, because there's a lot of overlap in terms of the games they offer. Like, there are some exclusives on each, but then there are a bunch of crossover things, a bunch of the Final Fantasies, for example.
Right.
You know, maybe it's considered deleterious to Sony's funds to have a rival streaming platform on its hardware. Switch is a harder case. It seems like it would be a real gain for Switch owners. I'm not sure how Nintendo would make money on it, though. Like, that's kind of the thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. I imagine that Nintendo would find some way to make money off of it. Mm-hmm. Because I can't imagine Nintendo being like, of course you can host this service on our thing for free. What do you mean? We love... not cracking down on things like that. So they would have to come to some sort of deal where Nintendo is making like 10% on every subscription or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see, like, a lot of the games on Games Pass is already on the Switch. The difference, right, obviously, is that you have to pay full price for them on the Switch or full price, discounted price, whereas if you got like Dead Cells on the Game Pass, like, you're only paying the subscription cost for it. So I really have to wonder. Well, I mean, I guess if you had to use the Nintendo online system to use Game Pass, that would maybe cover a cost.
Yeah, that would be a good kind of win-win for both parties. It does occur to me, because there was a lot of heartburn a while back about whether Game Pass was good for indies or not.
Right.
Because, you know, these indie studios would sign up to have their games on Game Pass. And generally the consensus has been, as far as my arm's length understanding, is that it has been good for indies. And I can say anecdotally, in my own case, there are a bunch of indies that I preview on Game Pass. And then I buy on Switch because, you know, that's a way to have them portably. Now, if they're very technically demanding, I prefer them on Xbox. But it strikes me that a streaming version of Game Pass on Switch would be especially beneficial to indies, because people could preview those indie games on a less than ideal version, like a streaming version, and then say, oh, I really like the aesthetic of this, or I like the play of it, and then buy the version on the eShop. It feels like it would be beneficial to a lot of folks to have it on there.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting stuff. All right, well, we will keep an eye on this story as it develops. Microsoft, again, is accusing Sony of blocking rights, paying for blocking rights, stopping developers from adding their games to Games Pass, and of course, Sony and PlayStation are very skeptical that Call of Duty is going to end up on the PS5, despite the fact that they have a contract that says otherwise. All right, let's go on to our next story, which is all about a different studio. Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick says that the next entry into the Grand Theft Auto series is well underway, and says that the Rockstar is determined to once again set creative benchmarks for the series, our industry, and all entertainment. That is a direct quote, stating that Grand Theft Auto and Rockstar has accomplished this in every other frontline release. So far, we know that GTA 6, or at least the next GTA game, will be set in a fictional Miami and star a female Latina protagonist. Likewise, we also know that the game promises to introduce new missions and new cities with regular updates. So what more can we expect from Grand Theft Auto and Rockstar? Or perhaps more importantly, what do we want to see from them in the game this time around? If you're in the audience and you have played a Grand Theft Auto game, I would love to know your opinion. What do we want?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm excited to hear from the audience on this as well. I have not played much of a Grand Theft Auto since, brace yourself, the original Grand Theft Auto 3.
Wow.
I know. Okay. Well, that's not so bad. I skipped Vice City. I skipped 4. I played 5 just long enough to find it pretty odious.
Did you play San Andreas? You never played San Andreas?
No, I never played San Andreas. That's supposed to be really good. Yeah. I at the risk of editorializing too much, I find the central core of the series kind of too nihilistic and mean-spirited for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's good for a lot of people, right? Like, that's a very popular, like, it's popular for a reason. It's very attractive for a lot of people. It just doesn't sit well with my kind of psychographic, if you will.
That's fair. And I fully agree with you, because I find myself thinking the exact same thing while I'm playing it. And then I'm like, oh, well, it's fine.
The gameplay's great, though, right? Like, you get those cool heights. It's a lot of fun. Driving is surprisingly top-notch in GTA 5.
It's fantastic.
Like, where else do you get an open-world game with good driving? You know, that's really impressive. I really like what I have heard. Obviously, I'm not too tuned into GTA 6, but I really like hearing that it's going to have a Latina protagonist. That's really nice. You know, kind of open up what's been a very problematically male-driven series in the past. I would defer to the chat to find out what people want to see in this.
All right. Well, Mellow Mystical says, more character customization, which I think is good in any game, right? So, like, GTA 4 and, in a way, GTA 5 both have the ability to kind of like dress up your character, go get haircuts, stuff like that. Even the main characters. So you can have like your own kind of experience in those games, despite playing an already laid out formula for you. Subsequently, of course, in the online modes, you get some pretty good character customization as well.
Right.
Some of it tied to like online story progression, others tied to like paying money, more money. Mello also says more in-depth play when it comes to non-violent criminal enterprises like club and money laundering, etc.
Yeah, bring in Yakuza, right?
That could be really cool. Just kind of, you know, being a what do they call a white collar criminal instead, right?
Yeah,
I like that idea.
Yeah, the crimes where you don't have to see the horrors that you've wreaked in the world up front.
Right, right. Yeah, you're just at the top all the time.
Right.
And you're just picking up your kids from school.
Yeah, I always this is really kind of a bizarre tangent, but I always like there's this old, what was it? It was like a Woody Guthrie lyric about the, you know, the exploits of some, in the end, he was kind of a criminal, Pretty Boy Floyd in the old American South and West. But there's a good bit in there about, you know, some folks robbing you with a 6-gun, other with a fountain pen, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
You know, that's just as deleterious in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. Jude also likes this idea. Yeah, I mean, like, it seems like they have tapped into it a little bit with heists and running businesses and stuff like that. There's a car. There's always a car. But it does seem like we need to kind of dig into it a little bit more, right? And I know that there is kind of a... there was for a while. I don't know if there still is. But there was a GTA 5 roleplay community. Yes, Jude just said it. There was a massive, massive roleplay community where folks were actually logging into customized GTA characters and playing these like scenarios through voice chat. It was really rampant, but in a fantastic way for a while. Mm-hmm. And people were playing like everything, right? Just like, I remember seeing someone role playing, you know, being lovers, boyfriend and girlfriend. And then finding out that the boyfriend was cheating, and then like getting into a fist fight, and then ending up in the hospital, like things like that, right? It's like, of course it's silly, but it's also a little realistic, and it's also what you would expect maybe from a Grand Theft Auto roleplay. So I wonder, and I hope, that when they say that they are ready to set creative benchmarks and move the industry, that they are paying more attention to those people as well, right? The people who are thinking kind of outside the box of GTA Online and taking it somewhere completely different.
Yeah, I think about that especially because, like, for example, I saw the ads for Street Fighter VI recently. Mm-hmm. And as a person who's not a fighting game fan, I was really taken with that Street Fighter VI showcase and whatever it was. I want to say it was like the Sony kind of quasi E3 or whatever that thing Jeff Keighley put on. Yeah, no, it was before that. It was what's the Jeff Keighley Summer Games Fest, I would say, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a Street Fighter VI ad, and I was really shocked to see that it looked really appealing to me as a person who hadn't previously engaged with this series. And so I think there is an angle for Rockstar maybe to capture folks like myself with a GTA 6 that offered, say, more character customization and more more gameplay that wasn't quite the sort of nihilistic crime story that they wanted to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that would alienate core fans is a different question. And so as an outsider, I wouldn't really push for that too hard, but it is a cool thing to consider that folks who either haven't felt particularly represented because of their identity in the series before, or folks who haven't enjoyed the gameplay or story before, might be able to be pulled into GTA 6 with more more interesting outside the box thinking.
They do seem to be hinting, at least, that the industry, or not the industry, but the company kind of seems to be moving in a more progressive kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
In every, you know, kind of phrase of that word.
Sure.
They seem to be, first of all, making more of an effort to make sure folks aren't being overworked.
Yeah. And trying not to kill their employees is a good start. Yeah.
And then on top of that, of course, with the, advent, I would say, in this case, of the female Latina protagonist, and just kind of taking seriously anything involving abuse, because there have been abuse allegations Rockstar and Take-Two. It does seem like they are perhaps shaping up to do something, as you said, maybe less nihilistic. So what that looks like in fictional Miami,
yeah,
who knows? But we will certainly see when GTA 6 releases eventually.
Mm-hmm.
One person did say that GTA 6 does seem to be more on track than Elder Scrolls 6. So that's good news, I suppose. All right, and on to our final story, Splatoon 3. So, as we said at the beginning of the show, Splatoon 3 is on its way out September 9th. You can play a demo, Splatfest World Premiere, August 27th, so later this month. And it looks good.
It
looks
does.
Real cool.
Yeah.
When I first got my Switch, I want to say 3 years ago, maybe at the start. No. I got it a year before the pandemic started, so just in time. And I was like so excited to start playing video games. A friend of mine, a friend of the show, Sam Nealand, actually bought me Splatoon 2 when we played for a while. And I fell in love with Splatoon. I think it is the perfect answer to arena shooters, especially being like Nintendo's flagship arena shooter. I think it's great. I think
it's so nice, you know, it's just so nice.
Yeah. It doesn't feel as violent as other shooters. it feels kind of silly and kind of cutesy. I appreciate seeing the Black Squid Kids.
Yes.
Kind of front and center.
Yes. Yeah.
Makes me very happy. It's just a cool game. I'm really excited about the card game, Turf Battle. Don't know what that's going to be. Table Turf Battle.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you mention that, because now, truth be told, in full disclosure, listeners, I dropped this into our notes document here, but I hadn't actually watched the direct on it. So I know, rather sinister of me. But I did read the recap of it and read the overview of this table turf battle, and I am all in. Like, it looks like Tetris, but it's also a collectible card game.
They've given us almost too many things to do, right? Mm-hmm. You have the single player kind of queue up on your own and get into the battle, anarchy battle, ranked mode. You have the kind of quick play shooter style things you can do. Of course, there's Splatfest, which is always great.
The best part. Yes,
this year your teams are rock, paper, or scissors.
Three-person Splatfest. I read a description of how this works and couldn't really parse it, having played Splatfest for the last two. But three-person Splatfest, weird. I don't know. Three-team, I should say.
It's going to be real, real chaotic, I think.
I was not excited for this game until reading about it today, I will confess. Yeah. I love Kami Jace. I was a Wii U owner. Boy. You know, I was one of the six in the United States who owned a Wii U.
The six.
Yeah. And so I had Splatfest, and I would play with the other, or Splatoon 1, and would play with the other five Wii U owners in the United States.
Wow.
And I really enjoyed it. And then I got Splatoon 2. I was a little bummed that they took out the weirdo, like, Splat Jump minigame or whatever it was called. Mm-hmm. That you would play while waiting for matches to load. It felt like kind of a lost NES game, which I thought was really cute. So them integrating a new, like, little mini game is very appealing to me. But even just all of the cool stuff that they announced for this, I was really struck by. Like, you don't have to wait for the announcements when you boot the game up. You can do Salmon Run, which is a really fun, like, PvE mode. You can do that anytime, as opposed to the strange, like, scheduled Salmon Run sessions of Splatoon 2. There's a lot of kind of player-first, player-friendly iterations they've done. And I think it ships with 12 maps.
Yes, yes, it does. Yeah. You can also get some rewards if you are a Splatoon 2 player.
Which you all should be.
For example, go get it right now.
There's not a better time to get Splatoon 2 than in the weeks before Splatoon 3.
Truthfully,
launches.
It may be on sale even.
Maybe.
Don't quote me.
It is Nintendo, though. Well.
And yeah, Nintendo does not like to put things on sale. It is a last-ditch effort.
Sure.
But you get some licenses for some cool weapons, regardless of your player level.
Yeah.
You can join Anarchy Battles right away if you own Splatoon 2. You start the game based on your Splatoon 2 rank. You get matched with players with similar Splatoon 2 ranks. So I might actually go play this and get my rank up if there are people playing right now.
Now's the time. You know what I'm going to do, Kami Jace? I am going to get Splatoon 3 digital because I have bought the last two titles in a physical edition because there were sales at the store. You know, I'm a sucker for a sale. But it's this tiny impediment that keeps you from, say, jumping in when you have another game, like a cartridge in the slot. So this time I am finally going to get the digital version, and then just whenever the mood strikes me, I will play Splatoon 3.
That is a great way to experience Splatoon 3. I say that because I know exactly what you mean. Like, I almost never want to switch my physical copy games ever. Yeah. Because I'm spoiled, you see. I've played too many digital copy games, and now I know nothing else.
It's a kind of profound laziness that we feel, right? Like,
yes,
got a cupboard full of physical games over there, but it's eight steps away, and
yes,
golly, like, I can boot up a digital one without moving.
Trying to collect more physical copies of things, though, just because I feel like I should do that.
I run hot and cold. It tends to be like, do I expect it to be either an online first experience like Smash Brothers, or is it the kind of thing that I expect to appreciate in value or get hard to find?
Sure.
You know, yeah, a lot of like licensed games. There's a lot of weird stuff that's good to get physical. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in my little retro game room recording this right now, and there's a lot of weird crap in here that has never been re-released. Mm. So physical is good. Physical is good, you know?
Buy physical sometimes.
That's the lesson.
Yes. Buy physical asterisk sometime. When it suits you.
Mm-hmm. Put yourself first.
Mellow Mystical says, Eventually all online games will become unavailable to play without a physical copy. I'm only pointing out that you said eventually twice.
There's a lot to be said for that. Like, you know, I'm a game historian guy. Like, that's kind of the bent of the podcast that we run and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so I am, you know, given towards historical look backs. But that intersection of like the online and the physical is a very interesting subject.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are games, like I would love a Super Smash Brothers Ultimate collected physical edition, even though so much of it is an online experience. Having a version of that that has all of the characters and can then be played for the next 40 years offline is very appealing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Couch co-op forever.
Yeah. Having someone watch you in real time and not on stream forever. There's something magical to having someone sit next to you and is like, oh no, watch out.
Oh, look out. That's how my wife and I play tons of games together is, you know, she'll be playing and I'll shout at the screen or I'll be playing and she'll shout at the screen. You know, that's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
The old ways.
Well, look out for Splatoon 3. Again, August 27th is the demo. And the full release September 9th. All right. Well, it's time to close out this show. So, of course, as we move along toward the end of the show, we always ask that you, the guest, give our listeners and our studio audience a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
Well, that's very kind. I would strongly recommend picking up a copy of Into the Breach, which is it's a turn-based strategy game. I know it's on PC, Switch. It just came to mobile, which is cool. Mm-hmm. It is, I'm of the opinion that it's the best game of the last 5 years. It's, it's like a small numbers tactical strategy game where you get a little squad of three and, fiddlesticks. I'm on the spot. I can't describe this elegantly enough, but it's, I like to think of it as kind of a quasi chess. Like you're, mm-hmm. you know what the opposing team is going to do. And so it's your job to stop it with your three people who have a limited number of moves.
Ah, that kind of strategy game.
It's very elegant. Like the elegant is mm-hmm. just the word that I would use to describe it. And it's kind of infinitely replayable. The reason why I bring it up now is it came out in 2018, but they just put out a huge update for it as the mobile version mm-hmm. came out in the last, I want to say, 2 to 3 weeks. So there's no better time than now to pick up a copy of Into the Breach.
Into the Breach.
Subset Steam Games. Gives That's it. Who made it. Subset Games.
Yes. Steam players give it a 9 out of 10. GOG has a 4.6 out of 5. And GameSpot has a 10 out of 10.
Yeah. So, top 10 games of all time for me. Yeah.
He ain't lying.
Mm-mm. No. It's like $20 on the Switch.
Oh, that's not bad, actually. No. Maybe I'll pick it up. I don't usually play games like this. Maybe I will, too. Into the Breach.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Well, what's your recommendation, though? I want to hear what you've got.
I never have proper recommendations.
Oh, no.
The reason being is that I always either am revisiting something incredibly old or playing some online game that people are already playing. So with that in mind, I'm going to actually recommend the game Killer 7.
Cool. Yeah.
Killer 7. Let me look up a quick fact about Killer 7. It is a 2005 action-adventure game produced by Capcom, makers of, as I said earlier, a game that disrespects Claire Redfield. it is honestly the weirdest game on the planet, in my opinion. It is one of those Suda 51 games, so if you've ever played... what's the other game that's not that great? No More Heroes? No More Heroes is great. I'm thinking of...
I know. What's that other one?
What's the other one? Killer is Dead? It's kind of like... No, Killer is Dead is the sequel, I think.
Ah, darn.
I'm thinking of, it's like Twin Peaks, but it's bad.
Deadly Premonition.
Yes.
That is not...
Deadly Premonition.
I don't want to contradict you on your podcast, Kami Jace.
That's not Suda?
Deadly Premonition is not Suda 51, I am sorry to say. No, it's another... There's another strange auteur. It's the fellow who did Dark Dreams Don't Die D4.
Yeah, that... Maybe I'm thinking of that guy.
Yeah, he's got... They've got slightly different styles. Suda 51 has more of like a punk style, and this guy...
Yeah. Maybe that's why Lord, I thought it
why
was...
Why can't him? I find his name? This guy does more kind of obscure stuff. He did The Good Life recently on... It's like a set in a British village. Suiharo. Hidetaka Suiharo. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Suihiro. Lord help me.
That is my mistake for putting disrespect on Suda 51's name. But
they're both great auteurs. They're both great auteurs. Yes, I'm sure both are... would be honored to be confused with the other. They both...
Killer 7, though, is this very strange, kind of like strangely cel-shaded game where you switch, I guess, personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm not even quite sure about what the game is about yet. I've just started playing it, but it is already up there with like weird but awesome games that I think like everyone should play once or twice. It has moments of like kind of jump scare even. Mm-hmm. Like it has like a little bit of everything for everyone. So Killer 7, go check it out. It's on Steam. It's probably on sale. I think I got it on sale actually. So yeah, just check it out.
I'm so glad to hear that Killer 7 was rescued from the GameCube. I for some reason I thought that it was kind of locked to that. Because it was part of that Capcom initiative to do their like 5 GameCube exclusives back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, it was released on Steam in 2018.
Thank goodness.
It was released in 2005. It's almost a 20-year-old game.
Cool.
Almost. But yeah, go check that out. And then, of course, check out Killer is Dead if you finish that one. I believe it is the sequel, and I haven't played it yet, but I do have it. And I'm sure it's great. I'm excited. I'm excited to try it out. So, with that out of the way, you now have to do one more thing for us, and that is... Tell us where we can find you on the internet if you have anything else to plug and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. You can find our Franchise Festival podcast, appropriately enough, at franchisefestivalpodcast.com. I'm happy that we locked down that URL. You can also, we put out one episode on the first of the month on the, whatever the next chronological core entry of the series that we're covering is. Currently, it's Resident Evil. Our last episode was Revelations 2. Our next is Resident Evil 7 at the time of recording. But if you want to get a bonus episode each month, our last one was on... I can't believe I'm blanking on this at the current time. It might have been on Resident Evil Dark Side Chronicles or Shaun of the Dead. We did like a zombie comedy movie month. But our next one, I can definitely say, is on the Resident Evil Netflix series. We're covering the first half of the Resident Evil Netflix series in August. It's coming out on August 15th. Anyway, point is you can get access to those episodes by backing us for as little as $3 a month at Franchise Festival. Oh, fiddlesticks. What's the Patreon? Lord, I hope you can edit this, Tommy Jace. You know, if you can, I think it'll be fun. You can also get access. You can also get access to the bonus episodes that we cover by going to patreon.com/franchisefestival. Our last one, I think at the time of recording, was on Shaun of the Dead, and our next one will be on the first half of the Resident Evil Netflix series.
Perfect. And now only the audience has to know.
I know. Hopefully only the live audience gets to hear that rotten edit.
Only the live audience has to know.
Yeah.
All right. As always, you can find me at Kami Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on Twitter at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news, reviews, and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review of your own or comment on Apple Podcasts or now on Spotify, I think. You can leave reviews on Spotify. Do it. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. Mm-hmm. And remember, you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian of Doghouse Esports. Follow Corgian on Twitter, please, at Doghouse Corgian, DoghouseCorgian. That's Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. Follow Riki on Twitter at dog_noise, DoghNoise. That's dog noise for Riki on Twitter. That's all for the weekly cooldown. I want to thank my audience. I'm Kami Jace. And who are you?
Sorry, I'm always expecting Paul to comment here, you know?
No,
nope, Paul. Oh, goodness. Gone. Yeah, I know.
Ain't no Paul.
I'm Chris of Franchise Festival. Yeah.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.